My own computer. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Pedophile Huntress. We are both here tonight with one common goal, that you would be encouraged in heart and united in love with us. We welcome all of you guys. Tonight with me is Lynn Martinez. Lynn is publishing a book that's going to be called Without Fault. I saw Lynn on her YouTube channel. She does a lot of work as well, like I do, advocacy work. I also listened to her story on Unfiltered Stories, so you guys can find Lynn as well. At the end of this, I will put all of Lynn's social media handles in the comments so you can find her. Lynn has a ministry called Sunrise, S-O-N. Rise, I think that's a darling play on it. And of course, we know who she's talking about. Jesus is our best friend, and he is my guy. She focuses on healing and the importance of speaking out. Welcome, Lynn, tonight. I'm so happy to have you here with us.
Thank you so much. I am so honored to be here on this platform.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. We're just storytellers. We like to tell our stories. And so with that, I want to first ask your motivation, why you do the work that you do. I ask that question because a lot of people always say to me, Jody, just move on. Why don't you just move on and get down the road? And so my answer to that is, the gift for me of final healing is to give back, right? And so to me, my creed is love. And so I give back. But what's your motivation to be here tonight with us?
Well, I remember the first time I started speaking about everything I went through, the abuse, and it was hard. Of course, the first time is always it's hard. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the response and I saw the messages and women emailing me back, your message inspired me, and I was also a victim. And I mean, I have friends that I've never even known they went through that stuff. So when they heard me speak, that gave them the motivation to come out. And when I started talking, that's when healing began.
I love that. Isn't it so true? And it brings life to us, right? It brings us just the gift of giving back. You know, I had somebody comment about on a panel that we did a few weeks ago, and she said, I wish I could hug you guys and tell you to move on. And I wanted to tell her, this is moving on. This is not being stuck. This is moving on in the grandest way as far as I'm concerned. And then I know, Lynn, that you would agree with, it's also just this beautiful creed of being a God follower, that, you know, a real Jesus follower, that you give back that love when he's let us out, right? That it is our job to give back to humankind, that particularly when they've had like experiences. So I want to bring the listener into your story. I know a little bit about it, but if you could just bring us into the story, much like you did on Filtered Stories, so that we know who you are, and just bring us in, you know, to the childhood where everything started going wrong.
Yes. So when I was 5 years old, my mom and dad divorced. At a very young age, I saw pots flying and arguing, screaming, and I was just, you know, there watching it. So from a very young age, I saw domestic abuse, and I saw it from the two people that were supposed to love me. So when I saw my father, you know, have his anger outburst, it made me a little bit nervous. And this was the man that was supposed to, you know, protect me. And seeing that side of him made me scared. So I really didn't have my dad, you know, to look up to. And when my parents divorced, I was five. I never saw him again until later on in life. My mother was, she was in and out of relationships. And I remember being 12 years old, and I moved out of Yonkers to move closer to family, which I had family in the Bronx, New York. And that move changed my life for the worse. My mom, you know, she thought she was doing a good thing by moving us there, but she met up with an ex-boyfriend that she had from high school. And the minute that I met him, just something crawled up my spine. I just didn't like him. I didn't like how he was looking at me. And one day, I was sexually abused by him, and I didn't know anything about sex, just things that I saw, maybe people kissing on TV. And I didn't know anything. And so he was touching me inappropriately, and he kissed
And
me.
you're
And
how old at this time?
12.
Oh, you're
I was, yeah, I
12.
was 12 years
Okay,
old.
so your parents divorced when you're 5, you moved to the
Yeah.
Bronx. So you're
I'm
there.
sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. No, you're absolutely fine. I want you to keep going. So then you live in the Bronx for several years, and then you're 12 and your mom gets back with this ex-boyfriend.
Right. She had this boyfriend when she was in high school, so we knew nothing about him. And so she didn't either, because a lot of years had passed and we change over the years. And so she brought him into our life, and I didn't like him. And now after that happened, I understood why. When a child tells you they don't like someone, they have this purity in them,
Right.
and we should always listen to the kids, the children. They have such innocence in them.
Right. It's true.
So,
So did your mom listen to you? Did you go to your mom?
I did. I told her I didn't like him, and she did have, boyfriends. So she thought it was, oh, you say that about everyone. And I just wanted my mom. I just wanted, to have her. So she probably thought that I was just saying that to like keep her all to myself. So I really can't, understand why till this day, but I did tell her I didn't like him from the beginning. And after that situation happened, where he touched me inappropriately, I just like hid in my room. I waited for my mom to be alone, but he kind of knew that I was going to tell her, so he made it so that I wouldn't find her alone, and he was always, with her. So every time she would be alone and I would call her, he would, take her, because he knew I was going to open my mouth. I was going to say something. But then the day that I did say something, she said, oh, well, maybe he was drinking that day, or maybe it was something you were wearing, just, defending him.
She didn't say it was something you were wearing. Did she tell you that at 12?
At 12 years old, she said, well, maybe
Oh,
you.
my
She said
goodness.
it in these words. She said, well, you're always walking around in your nightgown. Maybe it was something that you were wearing.
The minimization, isn't it crazy? Because it would have changed her life to listen. And I hear that so often with people. Parents, I see it to this day. I'll talk to people and they don't want to see the truth because it costs you to see the truth, right? You have to do something about it. But if you deny it, you don't have to do anything about it. So she denies it. You go to her, she denies it. Now, at 12 years old, how then do you defend yourself?
I was 12 years old. I was, when I tell my story, I always tell people it wasn't so much the molestation. It was just the fact that my mom didn't believe me. That's what hurt me the most. So I didn't know how to defend myself. I was now, after this happened, after she took his side, it was like that spirit of rejection opened up, the spirit of neglect opened up, and he was making it a habit of telling everyone around me how bad I was in school, how I wasn't doing my chores at home, always saying something to make me look bad in other people's eyes. So when I did say something to someone, they wouldn't believe me.
Right. They are masters at if there's a problem, you're the problem. And
Yes.
so I mean that is just so typical of an abuser, very typical of abuser. So now the years progress and he only touches you one time and then leaves you alone.
No, he tried another time, and I started to lock myself in the room. I didn't have a lock, but I invented, this is all in my book. I invented a lock with a hanger, and I put a chair, and now I'm living in fear in my own home. The only time I would get to go outside and enjoy other, kids was school time. After school, I'd come home and I'd stay locked in my room till my mother came home. And sometimes she would come home and just visit me in my room. But I was severely depressed. I was skinny. I didn't want to eat. We didn't talk about the abuse. She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't want to hear about it. So I didn't say anything because I didn't want her to be upset with me.
Right.
But
And you don't
that's
want
the kind
more rejection. And
of. Right.
Lynn, she's already told you the answer. And so a child knows, we hear it loud and clear. Maybe as adults, we ask one time, two times, three times. But you know what children do? They ask once usually, and if you don't listen, then they internalize it and they do believe it's kind of about them. You don't want more rejection. You know, we're good kids. Being good kids, we just kind of listen because we don't want more mayhem in the house. Because usually in these homes, there is chaos. Things are usually out of control because, or very controlled by an abuser, you know. So what then happens? When does this change? When do you just stay like this for years until you can leave the home?
No, I actually ran away. I think I was maybe 13 years old, and I started cutting class. I would ditch school. I would pretend I'm going to school, and I met a
Oh,
friend of
wow.
mine. She was my best friend, Lisa. Now we're riding the bus to Brooklyn, Queens, and we're just hanging out the
Oh,
whole day.
gosh.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and he's told everybody you're bad. Your mom doesn't protect you. So that assumes in your mind, the assumption is made in a child's mind that there must be something wrong with me, or I wore these outfits. You know what I mean? Like I've done something wrong. And when people tell you you're bad, you start acting bad, don't you?
Yes. It's funny because the school I was a they called the truancy department, and they said I wasn't, I had a lot of absences. I was cutting class, and they called CPS on my mother, Child Protective Services. And I remember having a home visit from them. And the day they came in, they saw my mother had a good job. We were living in a decent place. They didn't find, a messy home. They just asked me a couple of questions, why I didn't want to go to school. And I said, well, kids make fun of me. They were making fun of me. I was very shy. I didn't want to talk. And it was because of what happened to me. I
Right.
had speech impairment also because I didn't have I wasn't around a lot of people. I would just go to school and come back and lock myself in my room. That's all
Oh,
I had.
wow, right.
So now I have speech impairment. I wasn't spending enough time with other kids. I wasn't, using my voice. I wasn't talking much. So I was getting bullied. And but I did I
Right.
was reading a lot of books. I was like a nerd, but I was to myself. And I was failing all my classes because I wasn't even going to school. So, the CPS case manager never took me to another room to say, listen, what's going on? I want to help you. I think if they would have done that, I would have opened up and said, listen, I need help. I want to get out of here. He's
Right.
touching me inappropriately. He's getting me in trouble with everyone. But that never happened. They saw that my mom had a decent job, a decent home.
Wow,
I had my
right.
own room. I had clothes. I had everything a child needs, my needs, were being met.
Right,
But
right.
I was being abused. I was crying out for help. I was suicidal. They didn't know. There was many times I would look at the bottles of pills and wish I were dead. There was times where I would play hooky from school. I would ditch school. That's a New York thing. They say hooky, play hooky. I don't know
Yeah,
if
no, I know exactly what it means. And you know, Lynn, listening to you, much of my childhood, I was abused many, many, many times through the years. But you know what? It doesn't matter if it's one. And that's a really good point for listeners. But the problem is you check out a life, right? And when a child has a ton of truancies and absences from school, it's an indication that they have all they can do just to get through the day, right? Like, it's too much for us. I mean, I'm a really smart person. I learned after I got out away from my parents, but I got F's and D's all through high school because I had no more capacity left. I just didn't. There was nothing left in me. And then I remember getting a job and I was like, I'd read one class assignment and I'd know all the answers. And I was like, I must be smart. But Lynn, there was nothing left of me. So does that kind of resonate with you? Like you're just taxed so much. You can't go and sit in that chair. It's almost like torture, isn't it, to go to school?
Yes. So I remember being in a classroom. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't focus. Kids would make fun of me. But when you put a test in front of me and I'll be alone, I would ace it.
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. So then,
So,
so and that's so sad that actually CPS stepped in and then didn't find
yes.
it. And I say this often, Lynn, that, and I want you to continue, but I say often that the kids that you need to find, you can't find. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I've talked to God about it a lot. Like, how do you find these babies that need to be found? The 5-year-olds, the 7-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, the 12-year-olds, the 14-year-old, because they don't talk, right? And it's the second that a parent tells you, I'm not going to listen to you. If your parent doesn't listen to you, who the hell is going to, Lynn? As a child, you think nobody's going to listen to you, right? Who's going to listen?
I agree with you. And I thought about that many times, but there were a lot of red flags with the school system. You have to take that child that's shy. You have to find out why are they shy? Why are they not playing with the other children? Why are they not participating? And these were all signs of abuse. I didn't know that back then, but I learned that later on. I said, I had all the signs, even the way I dressed, because my mom's something you were wearing. I started wearing clothes that were like I was maybe a medium, and I was wearing clothes extra large because I didn't want people to see me or my body. I was hidden in my clothes. I would wear like oversized shirts, oversized jeans that required a
But
belt.
right, Lynn, by your mother saying it was the clothes that you wore, then you take on the responsibility, and then shame hides our bodies. Then we can't be sexy, we can't be physical, or we're sluts or whatever. In our mind, we're thinking we're asking for people to hurt us, which is so far from the truth. Wearing a nightgown is not provocative. I mean, but right, it translated into I'm going to begin to hide myself, which is really sad because a youthful figure, you should be wearing bathing suits and going swimming. And in my life, I didn't have that either. So I understand that we just start hiding immediately. So you don't have that natural youthful funness. Does that make sense? It's all
A lot of
gone.
times.
Yeah, like it's just gone, and it's sad. You miss out on that, wearing shorts and just being free to just, not have to think about I need extra large stuff on. So now you just keep going in your you're still with your mom. He's still there, so I assume he never leaves the home.
Well, there was the first time I ran away. I remember I was in my friend's house, and she lived down the block from where I used to live. And I looked out the window, and I could see where I lived, and I saw the cops, the patrol car right in front. And I said, "Oh, I'm in trouble now. My mom called the police. They're looking for me." And I was there, looking out the window, and I was afraid. And that whole experience, I could just see it looking out her window. And I ended up staying with her friend who owned a car, and I stood in his car hiding out from the police. And I stood in the car for 5 days, and I didn't want to go home.
And how old were you at this time?
13, almost 14.
Wow. And here you were being hurt, and the cops were going to come get you because you're a runaway. Why are you a runaway, right? Like, people don't ask the right questions. So what happens after this 5-day stint in the car then?
So I stood 5 days in the car, and I was just going to visit my friend. That's how I would shower. That's how I would eat. I wasn't eating like before, and I was just hiding in like I don't even know if the car was stolen. I think it was stolen, but I was in the back seat, and I would hide myself with a coat.
Oh
I
my
put the
God, you're
coat over me.
13.
Yes,
Wow. That's how
13
you
years old.
protected yourself. Remember when I asked you the question, how did you protect yourself? The right answer is I didn't know how, but you know what? That is all part of protecting yourself. It's not part of being rebellious, it's part of protection.
So one day I went to a friend's house, and another friend from school and her mom, she said, "You look familiar. I think I know your family. Who's your family?" And I'm 13, I'm not thinking. And I told her who they were, and she's like, "Oh, I think I know them." But that was it. She gave me something to eat. She said, "Come by tomorrow." And I said, "Okay, I'll come by." And of course, at this time I want to go because I want to eat. I'm in the street, so I wanted something to eat. And when I went back, my mother was there. She had contacted my mom.
And how did that discussion go with your mother at that time?
When I walked in and I saw her, I think I turned like pale white. I'm like, "Oh no, she called her." And I was just afraid. I didn't know what to do. She wanted to like come up to me and hug me, and I was upset with her, for believing all the lies, for letting things to happen. So I was very upset, and I was like, I'm sorry, can I just stop for a minute? I'm sorry, I gotta get the doorman. So, she wanted to come up to me and hug me, and I was like so mad at her. I didn't want her to touch me. I didn't want to hear her side of the story. I didn't want to hear anything. I just wanted to go about, my life, and I didn't even want to go home. So, the friend that was there, the lady's mom that was there, she just said, come to the room, and you can talk. And that's what we did. She gave us a room where we can talk. And I told her, my mom, I said, I don't want to go back to the house if he's still there. And she said, and I said, oh, another thing, I know you call the police because I saw the patrol car outside from my friend's window. If he's still there, I'm gonna, just tell the police why I really left. So now my mom is like scared, and she said, okay, I'll talk to him when I get home. And I said, I would like to stay with my friend just one last day, and I'll go home tomorrow. Just pick me up tomorrow, and I'll go home. I wasn't ready to go home and face him. So she said, okay. She let me stay with my friend, and I said, this gives you enough time to talk to him, and tomorrow I'll go home when he's not there.
So, really, in that conversation, Lynn, your mother is saying, I believe you.
Right. That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's what you
In my
thought.
phobia of mine, I'm happy. I'm going to have my mom again. I'm not going to live in fear. I don't have to lock my door. I can go back to school. I can be a kid again. I can be free. I can be like the rest of the youth and, in the world, and be free and have my friends over. But that's not what happened.
So what did happen?
The next day, she comes to get me. I have my things with me, and I went home with her. As soon as she opened the door, he was there. I went straight to my room. I slammed the door, and she comes into the room, and she says, "Don't slam the door." And I said, "No, you told me he's not going to be there, and you lied to me." And she just said it wasn't that easy, and I really didn't want to hear what she said. I was upset with her. And from that day forward, I hated my mom. I hated my mom, and I was very depressed. I wanted to kill myself. I continued cutting class, ditching school. I continued that behavior for a while. And I remember there were even times when I would take the subway. I loved riding the subway. I would just get lost in Queens and
I
Brooklyn and
bet, right? Especially when you just want to waste time. What better place to get lost on, right?
Yes. And I remember a couple of times standing in front of the subway tracks, waiting for the train, and I just wanted to jump. And I think I even told my friend one day, I had told her something about me jumping, and she was just like scared. She's like, "You're not going to, are you?" And I'm like, "No, I was too coward to do it." But I really wanted to take my life.
And because it's understandable, you have no one's going to protect you. You know now that you don't know when you're not safe there. It's a horrible way to live. It truly is, because now you've got a predator in the house and nobody's doing anything to stop him or get him out of the house. It's a terrible place to be. So go ahead and keep going.
So I was basically like that. I would go to school whenever I felt like going. And on my, I think it was on my 15th birthday. I'm sorry. It was December, and I was 15 years old, shy of my 16th birthday. I was with my boyfriend, and I found out I was pregnant. So now, yep, I found out I was
15.
pregnant at 15. And when I was about 8 months pregnant, his mom kind of took me in, and she was nervous because I was 15. I'm sorry, I was now 16, he was 17. And we were both young. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just playing around with sex.
Right.
And I'm now pregnant. And one day when I was 8 months pregnant, I get a knock on the door in my boyfriend's house, and it was my mom. She knew that I was staying with him. She knew I was pregnant. I had told her over the phone. I was afraid, but I did tell her over the phone that I thought I was pregnant. And then I told her, yes, I went to Planned Parenthood. They told me I was pregnant. And then when I was 8 months pregnant, I get a knock on the door, and it was my mom. And I saw that her eyes were red. She had been crying, and she told me to please come home. My stepdad was in the hospital. He was very sick. He had pneumonia, and she just wanted me to come home with her. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, my mom needs me. I'm looking still for the love of a mom. And I'm
Of
thinking, okay, I'm
course.
going to get my mom now. That's all that I'm thinking. And
Right.
that's all that I wanted. And I needed my mom now more than ever, because now I'm a teen mother,
And you
or
got to be
going to be
scared
a
out of
teen
your
mom.
mind again.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So I was kind of happy that she came to get me, but not happy why she came to get me, if that makes sense.
No, I do. It
And
does.
I let her come and get me. I stood in the house. She was back and forth in the hospital. He had fallen into a coma. He had an uncle who was a pastor, and he was basically praying for him and my family, of course, my mom, my grandmother, and he even did home visits. So I saw him. He wanted, to pray for all of us. I didn't want him to pray for me. I didn't want to know about God. It was
Right.
God's fault that I'm in this position. It's God's fault he let me get molested. It's God's fault that I'm depressed. Where was God when all this happened to me? God does not love me. And so that's everything that's going on in my 16-year-old head. I didn't want to know about God.
Right. Logically so, because he didn't help you either, right?
Yeah, so that's how it was. My stepdad, he did pass away. I didn't see him in the hospital. I did, however, go to his to the funeral.
Oh wow, that's a big turn of events, Lynn.
I didn't want to. I was
Right?
the family wanted to know where I was, and my mother, told me to go, and I didn't want to go. I didn't go near, where he
Right.
was. I just listened to the sermon that his uncle, that was a pastor, he was preaching. He did the eulogy, and I was just there listening. He was talking about a merciful God, a God of love, and he made an altar call. I didn't want to know about this God. I wanted to leave. I just, I thought, okay, he's out of the picture now. Now I'm going to have my mom to myself.
Right.
So there was a little part of me that was happy, but
Right.
also I was numb to pain. I became numb.
Right.
And so,
Well, you
my
had to.
cousin.
What are you going to do with all those emotions when you're a child, right? I mean, we don't have the capacity to know what to do with it. So it's a logical conclusion to just not use emotions anymore and go numb.
Yes. So I forgot to mention, but I had a couple of cousins that I did open up to, and I had told them about the molestation. And I know they told their mom, that was my aunt, and my family started to, know what happened, but no one ever came to my
Oh,
rescue.
right. Isn't
So
that,
while
yeah,
I
it's just,
was
okay, keep going.
there. So while I was there at the funeral, I had to see all these people that never came to
Ah,
rescue.
right. That's so hard. And so now he's passed, and you are staying with your mother. You're 16 and pregnant. How does
16, I'm
this
pregnant.
work with your mom?
So we never ever spoke about the molestation. She had a new life now. She started going to church, to the same church where his uncle was. And I saw her little by little change, but we never spoke about the molestation. We never spoke about my rotten childhood. We never spoke about any of that stuff. It was basically swept under the rug. And I didn't want to mention it, because now I have my mom. And I have my
Right.
son, and now I'm watching her as a grandmother love my son, helping me with the baby. So we kind of bonded through my son. And I did see her, a little bit happier because now she has God in her life. Now I'm looking, watching her read the Bible. And this is the day that kind of changed my life. But one day she goes to work and she always had Family Christian radio on. And I heard from her room, I heard the radio and Reverend David Wilkerson was on. And I'm listening to him. I didn't know who he was at the time. And I heard him saying the testimony of Nikki Cruz,
Yes, I
Tim
love that. I
Chapman.
know exactly who both those men are and love them.
Yeah. So I'm listening to him, and now he got my attention because he mentioned he's in New York. And I'm like, New York, I'm in New York. So I'm listening to Nikki Cruz also, who was there, and he's talking about his life in the street, gangs, drugs, everything I was around, but thank God I was never into, I was afraid to be in a gang, and I saw so many people on drugs while I was running away and on the subways that I was so afraid to touch drugs. So I'm listening to him, and now I'm interested. I'm like, wow. And David Wilkerson preached in a way that he, every time I would, even today, I hear him and I cry, and I said, I need to visit this man's church. But he did promote the book on the radio. It was The Cross and the Switchblade.
I remember that book actually in my early, I think like in my 20s or something, that book came out. It's a fantastic book.
I love it. I still love that book.
Yep, I
And
read
I
it years
made
ago.
me too. I read it. I think it was 91, 91 when my son was born.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
really cool. So when did then it sounded like, so part of abuse is the wound happens and then denial sets in because people and families don't want to talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. And now denial makes it go away. But at some point in life, the wound resurfaces, right? So when did that wound resurface again for you? So now you've kind of come, you think, all right, God, I'm going to give you a chance. And I love through Wilkerson and Nikki Cruz. But now, though, does your wound come back to you and say, I need to be found so that I can be healed?
Yes. So, wow. It was through my behavior. I didn't know what a marriage was. I went into a marriage for the wrong reasons. I wanted to make my life right because I had kids with this person. But I started seeing, I was not right. There were things about me that I wouldn't respond. It's like a part of me went numb with and when everything happened. I didn't know how to love. I was in and out of relationships. So it was when, the rejection as well. There were things about me that one day in 2017, after my divorce, and I had three kids already, and I just started seeing things in my life that I said, even though I know the Lord, it's just I was never healed, I was never delivered. So that's when, I started seeing the behavior, and there were I never ever spoke about what had happened in my life with my mom. Never touched it. And when I went into consecration in 2017, when I went really in deep with God, that I just like turned everything off around me. I turned off the TV, I turned off social media. I literally went into my prayer closet because I saw that I was stagnant in many areas. That's when deliverance started to come. When I tuned everything off and I had a one-on-one with the Lord, and He took me back to my childhood room where that happened, that pink bedroom when I used to live in the Bronx. And when I visited that place, the Lord showed me that's where the spirit of rejection came in. That's when the neglect came in. That's when so many things entered and I didn't know it. The shyness, me looking like a boy, and me not feeling safe, protected. That's where everything entered.
Loved. Yeah, all of those things. It's really it's been fascinating to me that I think God is letting his people know that he's in. If you think about when Jesus was here, he stood up and he said, I came to heal the brokenhearted. and set the captive free. How do you heal a broken heart if you don't ever return to the pain that broke the heart in the first place? And so I really think it's cool that God is standing up his people to say, I want to heal you. That's what I came to do, because God is love. It's not what he does, it's who he is. And so I love that you said there is this time, because the wound happens, we all go into denial, the people around us tell us to move on, and then the wound at some point always is going to return. It has to, because the older we get, the harder it is to maintain and cover and deny and block the things that happen to us. Because as you said, now all of a sudden we're on the streets and we're broken, like we're locked down. I always say, like, we're locked down. I took all of my emotions and just put them in a little tool bag, and it was like, oh, am I supposed to feel sympathy? Oh, am I supposed to feel hurt? Oh, am I? Because they were just tools. They weren't a part of me anymore, because I had to take those out of me. I wouldn't have survived if I continued to be gentle and kind and soft and all those things. I wouldn't have survived in my world, because it was very unsafe. It was full of rejection and pain and chaos. And so you'd go numb. But the problem is, if you don't return and take that numb suit off, you're still numb, right? So you showed up and now you're divorced and you're like, wow, God, I'm still numb. And then it's the beautiful redemptive work of God that comes in and says, hey, I'm here to heal the brokenhearted. Did you guys ever see that part of the Bible? It's what I do, right?
I want to read this scripture. It's Psalms 15, 2 and 3, and it says, those who walk is sorry, John 8, 32.
You're okay. You're
That
fine.
one is nice too. I like it. But John 8:32 says, if you continue in my word, then you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth sets you free. I had to be faced with my truth. I had to come face to face with my past and things that happened in my past in order for me to be set free, in order for me to be healed and delivered. I had to come face to face with it. So these were things that had to happen. And I remember, the Lord had to. It's been a while since I spoken to my mom. I think it was like 9 years, and the Lord said, "Now it's time. Now it's time. You need to contact her, and you need to, contact her. And now you need to talk about what happened, because I never ever spoke about what happened."
Now, see,
She.
Lynn, I didn't realize, and I want you to finish, but see, 9 years went by. What happens is we get now into life, but all of a sudden, I don't want to talk to you, but you don't really know why, but you just go away, because see, that numb suit, all of that pain, all of the rejection, all the time you didn't protect me, that's still in my heart. And we can deny it, we can put it down, we can hide it, but it's still there, right? Because you just said 9 years now. You're an adult, you have your own children, but you're off somewhere else. That's interesting to me, because that relationship was broken and it needed to be repaired, right?
Yes. So 9 years passed, and I got her number from a family member, and I just said, "Hi, Mom. I just want to know if you're okay. I would like to start, to have a relationship with you. I am on a spiritual healing journey, and I just, I want to start clean. I want to start fresh. I didn't want to just jump and say, 'Why did this happen to me?' because she wouldn't
Right.
answer me. So I had
Right.
to learn how to do it. But before I sent the message, the Lord had to show me that my mom too was abused. And when he showed me that through certain behaviors, I had to learn that so that I could accept, be able to accept her answer. So God was like preparing me. And that's the beauty of God. He doesn't like throw you in the wolves, It's
It's
he's
true.
so gentle.
You know, he is, and I want to just share, there is another side to that. It doesn't always end well for people who go back for healing. You know what I mean? Like, I talk to a lot of people who their family kind of severs them off, particularly in incest, when you go back to the family to talk about healing. And so I just want to be really sympathetic and empathetic to the people who have reached out and then that didn't work. I think it's beautiful and wonderful. I think the ultimate goal is restoration and all that. But sometimes, particularly in incest, it doesn't happen. Those families will cut you off. So if you're listening in that and it didn't go well for you, we just send love to you. But Lynn, I love that. So keep going. I just like to put that because I know that sometimes that can be a heart hurt for people. But you go back to your mom and it works. Like you guys talk through things and it's good,
We
huh?
talked for that little bit of time. Yes. After I told her, why I was contacting her, that I wanted to have a relationship with her, after she answered me, that's when I asked the question. I said, I'm on a spiritual healing journey, and I just would like to know why you didn't believe me when the molestation happened, when I came to you and told you. And I didn't
Good
hear
for
from
you.
her for 3 days.
That takes such courage, Len, to do that. It takes such courage.
Oh, my heart was beating. My hands were sweating. And I said, okay, God, I'm going to be obedient. Here we go. And I sent
Right.
the message. But I didn't hear from her for 3 days.
That was
And
probably torturous 3 days, right?
yes, I said, oh, here we go. I'm not going to hear from her. But during those 3 days, I just kept in the Bible. I kept praying. I prayed for her. And 3 days later, she finally answered me. And she said, I didn't know what to do at the time that happened. And she said, and please, I don't want to talk about this again.
Oh,
So
wow.
I was upset. I'm like,
Yeah,
you didn't know what to
that's
do. I'm your only daughter. What do
right.
you don't know what to do? That's what I wanted. That's how I wanted to react. But I felt the Holy Spirit say, that's her honest answer. Now you know. Now you can move on. Now you can just pray for her and just go on with your life. Like, that was my closure, but I was already like, what do you mean? And, but then God is so good. He was just preparing my heart. And I said, and that proved that she was abused. Because remember, when you're always abused and you come from that line of abuse, you think it's normal. You think it's a normal
And
thing.
of course the response of, and I don't ever want to talk about this again. Just from my heart to yours, I wish that it could have been, I'd love to talk this through with you, and I'm so sorry I wasn't there. Like, that'd be a really cool response here. And I love that you're being so loving and forgiving, and I think that's awesome. But I would just love to be that mother for you that said, I am so sorry I wasn't there. I'm sorry that I didn't know how to handle it. You can talk to me about it as long as you need to talk to me about it. And I've let my children do that, Lynn, because I didn't protect them. I was with a very abusive man. And for any parents that are listening and you don't know what to do, just allow your children to talk. It actually will bring you closer. And then you don't always have to have that weird legacy of distance because there's a little bit of a gap when you don't allow somebody. Where's the hug that needed to be? To me, when you say to your child, I wasn't there for you, and on my watch, you were hurt. I want to offer myself to be there for as long as you need because I feel like that's extending hugs to them. You know what I mean? And my kids have grown now. They're in their, late 30s. But it's been healing. Lynn, we're finally back to this really beautiful place where that worked, right? And so if you have, but it takes courage also to listen to your children's pain, right? Because most parents just say, I don't want to hear it. It's terrifying. It makes me feel horrible. I was a bad parent. We can't change it, but we can certainly be there and offer support and love. And to me, when we listen, Lynn, it feels like a great big hug every time, doesn't it? I mean, it does, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
you,
I can.
go
I'm
ahead.
sorry, go
Nope, go. You're fine.
ahead. I can also say that as a parent, I didn't do a good job either. I was not delivered from my pain. I was still broken.
Right.
I never found, the healing that I needed on, until I was like in my 40s, my
Right.
early 40s. So there were a lot of things that I did as a mom. So when you were talking about all that, I said, that happened to me too. I had to just sit down and listen to my children because I sheltered my children. When they wanted to go out, I was afraid, oh, they're gonna get molested. And
Right.
I put like this protective, demanding shield over
Spirit
them.
of fear around them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, I, later on, I had to explain and tell them, you know, I didn't realize, but I was like that, but it was because of this and this and this. And I'm like, I don't want to justify my behavior, but I was broken. I needed healing. And I have said sorry to my children,
See, and
you
that's
know, and
beautiful, you know, and that those are restorative words because we are broken humanity until we go back home to be with our creator. We are broken humanity. And the best that we can do is say, I love you with all I am, and I'm going to continue to be the best person I can be for you tomorrow. But I can't go back and change yesterday, but I can listen to your pain. You know, it's a beautiful thing to offer because you're right, Lynn. Most of us don't get healed until our 30s and 40s because we live that denial. We all do. Everybody puts it away. Nobody wants to listen. They don't want to listen to us now. But now,
right.
you just still don't have to. You can turn us off. It's fine. You're right. It's a beautiful measure then to be the best person that we can be and give back to our children. So that's beautiful. I cannot believe that we're almost at time. That's crazy. It's been such a beautiful That's the quickest hour I've had in a long time in my life, and it's been beautiful. I want you to just spend these last minutes, I love the advocacy work that you do as well, and that it really is, like you said, when God says the truth will set you free, it really is. It's not just this made up truth, but the truth about our lives. I think that people don't recognize what the Spirit of God is all about, and it's about being our authentic self. And the authentic self, if we keep that authentic self in a box that's locked down, how can we ever be free, Lynn? Right? So the more that we express the things that happen to us, and the more we get to be who we are, and like you say, if that's the best you can do, Mom, I'm good with that. I can still be good, and we can be good if your family severs you, like my family has severed me. Or I can go back if I want to be fake. I'm not willing to do that. You know what? I'm still okay because I'm living in my authentic self. And it feels wonderful, doesn't it? So I just want you to take some time just to wrap up with just the things that maybe we didn't touch on. I mean, you already talked about where God wasn't when often when we're young. I know I left my father. He was a Baptist, and not saying anything bad about Baptists, but he was a Southern Baptist, so it was like Bible study in the front, rape in the back. So it takes us time to filter through. Why does God get blamed when he's not? You know what I mean? He's not even there. It's so bizarre. How come Satan doesn't get blamed? Like, all of these people are. If you're gonna hurt a child, you're probably. I just have to say you're given over to darkness, right? Like it's evil. So, but the weird thing is, Satan doesn't get blamed. God does. So I appreciated you saying I was mad at him, but I'm not mad anymore. And I was pretty mad at God myself in my early life. I really was because I felt like he'd let me down as well. But go ahead. I'm going to give you the last few minutes just to be who you are and just share what you'd like to share if you feel like we've left something out.
After everything had happened, I wish I could say that I have a relationship with my mom today, but I don't. I invited her to my wedding with my husband, and she didn't show up. So I'm not, you know, I learned how to forgive. I'm so different today. I'm free. I'm free. I don't know how to explain it, but the Bible says he who sets free is free indeed. And I feel so free, you know, after I let everything out. The Lord gave us a beautiful ministry called Sunrise, and it's spelled Sonrise. And we minister to the homeless community. We go to women and children's shelters, minister the word of God, and we have travel care packets with us. We give food. It's beautiful. The community is rising, so I'm just so happy with what God is doing. I do have a podcast on YouTube called A Moment with Lynn, where a lot of my testimonies are on there. I was also on Unfiltered Stories, and I'm just so happy that after so many years, the Lord gave me back my voice. You know, I feel like now that I can talk about it, I found freedom, I found healing, I found deliverance, and I'm hearing testimonies from women coming forth and like, wow, that happened to me too. And it's just so rewarding, you know, just to see someone where I was. And because I came forth and I'm talking, and now they can talk as well. So I feel like, you know, I had like duct tape, and the Lord just went, took the duct tape off, and here I am. And now I have a voice, and now I can be me. Now I'm safe in Him. And the feeling is so different. You know, it's true. It's the joy of the Lord.
Oh, it's
The true
so
joy.
beautiful. And I'm sorry, Lynn, I didn't realize that you and your mom didn't stay close. I didn't mean
No, that's fine, because
to
that,
cut.
you know, that's what God does. I mean, not that part, but I wanted forgiveness. I let her know that I do forgive her, you know, and she knows that. And I still love her and I still pray for her.
I get
But
it.
unless she faces her own demons and what happened to her, then there can be a connection.
You know, and that's actually a beautiful thing to remember is often our stories trigger other people. And the reason they want us to be quiet is because it's triggering them in their own life about all the hidden stories. And I think that's very much the people who want you to move on and just let it go and all that. They don't want us around because we're triggering. Well, you know what? I think it's a beautiful place to end. Thank you so much for being here. Father, I pray that this triggers people into wellness and health and love and freedom. Lynn, thank you so much. If you would please email all of your social media handles and that sort of thing, I'll put it in the comments and get this up and send you the link. Bless you, sister. It's been wonderful spending time with you. Thank you so much. And I may ask you back for a panel interview because they're really cool to talk about and we learn so much together. So I hope you'd be willing to do that in the future.
Definitely. Thank you
All
so
right.
much. God bless
Awesome.
you. Nice
God
meeting
bless you. Yes, nice meeting you too.
you.
Protection.
Thank you.